This podcast was recorded Thursday, March 12th at 12:43 p.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like there won't be a secondary market for toilet paper.
Is there anything left to cancel at this point?
I don't think so.
Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those shrewd politicians or snollygosters. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. It's hard to talk about politics these days alone because of the coronavirus fears and COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Every day, as Steve mentioned, something else is canceled. The lines get longer at the supermarket. So politics continues, though, but politics is overhanging a lot of this.
Gives us a little perspective.
Yes. And yet, of course, you want to separate public health from politics, but it's our political leaders who make the decisions about public health. So You can't separate the dance from the dancer too much on this. So what do you think about President Trump's address this week?
I thought it was good. There's certainly a lot of pushback on his near complete travel ban with Europe. I prefer not to weigh in on whether or not that was appropriate or not. I've been following things on a much more granular level here at the state, where Governor DeWine and Dr. Amy Acton have really become the face of this issue. And I would say, just from a on-the-stump sort of political standpoint, DeWine has handled it very well. Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown says he wishes President Trump had handled this like Mike DeWine. And so I just think from a PR standpoint, DeWine has done very well.
When you look back at his decision last week here in Columbus to basically cancel the Arnold Fitness Festival, basically the expo was canceled and the competitions were done without spectators for the most part. A couple of events did have spectators. He took a lot of heat for that. It was too quick, too early. Mm-hmm. Fast forward a week. Okay, right after that, South by Southwest gets canceled. Now arenas are being played, basketball games, NBA cancels all of its
games. Ohio State University closes classes.
So he was ahead of the curve there. So he comes out saying, look, I was right.
Our guest this week is our very own WOSU's Nick Evans, who has been covering coronavirus-related issues around the city. Nick, I know you're here mainly to talk about the presidential race. If
sure.
You had to, what has been your reaction to sort of the political environment around this global pandemic, as it's now called?
Well, it has been really, really weird to watch it, because I think that I probably fit in like most other Americans, seeing this and thinking, it's not that big a deal.
Right.
It won't be that big a
problem. We don't see stuff like this often.
But, you know, as it has developed, as it has moved forward after, you know, the past couple of weeks, it feels much more serious. And I think you're right to point out DeWine being ahead of the curve on this. And now he is coming out smelling like roses. It's going to be really interesting to see how it actually does end up playing out. I don't know that we're in for the Spanish flu, but, this is certainly going to be playing out over the next couple of months, it seems like, at the very least.
Yeah, I mean, Amy Acton, the state health director, said on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU just today that she says this is like when you're watching TV weathermen in the wintertime and they're predicting a bad snowfall. You hope that the snowfall is not as bad as what they're predicting. And sometimes it's not as bad as what they predicted, but many times it is what they predicted. So they're preparing for the massive snowfall, to use the metaphor, and hoping that it's just a rainy, slushy mess.
God willing.
And the creek don't rise?
Yeah, and it's really affected every part of society.
Yeah.
We saw some pictures today from some Central Ohio Costco stores where there are lines out the door. It is a scary situation. We implore people to continue washing their hands. Amy Acton has been big on act appropriately, don't panic. But
yes,
this is a serious issue. I mean, if the CDC says that this kills about 1 in 7 people over the age of 80 who contract it, that's a very
that's
high
scary
number.
That's
a scary number. It's about 15% of people over the age of 80 who contract this die.
Yeah.
And so that's why they've put things in place with nursing homes. Governor DeWine on Thursday planned to issue an order banning large gatherings, sporting events, concerts, all kinds of things. So it's going to be – this podcast might be dated by the time people hear this.
And it looks like Mike DeWine won't need that order because all these teams and leagues are canceling.
Right.
But politics continues. Ohio does go to the polls officially for its primary on Tuesday, St. Patrick's Day. It's not Super Tuesday. It's not Big Tuesday. It's just plain old Tuesday, St. Patty's Tuesday.
Fine Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's okay Tuesday.
17th of March, Tuesday. Anyway, it remains a two-man race for the Democratic nomination, but for how long? Bernie Sanders acknowledges his campaign is losing the electability argument, but refuses to drop out of the race, at least not now, not before taking on Joe Biden at least one more time.
Donald Trump must be defeated, and I will do everything in my power to make that happen. On Sunday night, in the first one-on-one debate of this campaign, the American people will have the opportunity to see which candidate is best positioned to accomplish that goal.
Bernie Sanders did not do so well on Big Tuesday. Former Vice President Joe Biden had a good night Tuesday and seems to want to move past Sanders, but in a nice way.
And I want to thank Bernie Sanders and his supporters for their tireless energy and their passion. We share a common goal, and together we'll defeat Donald Trump. We'll defeat him together.
That sure sounds like something you say after your opponent has conceded.
Yes, that sounded like a post-concession speech
address,
which is not uncommon. You see this in primary fights all the time, that the candidate who's ahead jumps ahead of the concession speech, saying, it's over, time to bow out and y'all get in line. But Bernie Sanders, you know, appropriately so. He's behind. He's got a tough path, but it's not over yet.
Nick Evans, you were covering Joe Biden on Tuesday here in Columbus. What was the vibe from the rally?
Well, calling it a rally might be a little bit aggressive. I mean, like,
it was close to the public.
Yeah, it was a small gymnasium. The attendees that weren't press were basically the supporters fanned out behind him for the cameras to catch. This wasn't like a raucous rally that, you know, has been associated with other Democratic candidates like Sanders or Warren, or on the opposite side of the aisle, you know, President Trump. But basically, he took the opportunity to talk about guns and his firearm policies. He touched on all the things that we all hear about, universal background checks, gun show loophole, and he even talked about trying to roll back the current exemption for civil liability for gun makers.
But the big one was earlier in the day. He used bad language when confronted with a gun rights supporter. We can say this on a podcast.
Right. He told him
he was full of shit because the man accused Joe Biden of saying Joe Biden wanted to take away his guns. And Biden corrected him using that colorful language by saying, no, I only want to take away your AR-15. You don't need the AR-15. And he mentioned that at the event you were at.
Yes. He was very explicit.
As explicit as he was earlier in the day?
Literally explicit.
No. He said no one needs them. And is the sort of the thing that is sort of typical of Joe Biden when you see him talk is when he's on form, there's a lot of real quiet, you know, steady. And then really, really loud to make the point. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those examples of him, you know, really kind of leaning into that. You know, it was sort of the kind of thing that you would expect.
Well, I don't know.
In terms of policy.
This is new now. Democratic candidates are not afraid to say that.
Well, it's the Trump effect. It's like I've said, Donald Trump is the first politician who's really been able to say, F you, what are you going to do about it?
Not just that, but on guns. A Democratic candidate 4-8 years ago who was in line to get the nomination, mm-hmm. wanted to be a moderate, would not call for banning of any weapon. Now, Joe Biden, Beto O'Rourke started it, I guess, on the Democratic side, are saying, you know what, we don't need these guns. And the polls support them.
Sure.
And I think that's aimed purely at suburban people, namely suburban women. After all of the mass shootings over the past few years, Joe Biden feels comfortable. He can say that and not lose votes.
Well, certainly post-Parkland, the idea of like the assault weapons ban, which is something that he did bring up that I didn't mention a moment ago, trying to reinstitute something like that. That is certainly new. I feel like in recent races, though, it's been fair game for Democrats to talk about, you know, universal background checks, closing the gun show loophole, which, of course, he did touch on.
Yeah.
But you could be right. Like the idea of like a more aggressive stance to say, this gun or, you know, this kind of magazine, those are Those are gone now.
And 75% of Americans agree with him.
Yeah.
And I don't think he lost a bit of support when he told the guy he was full of shit. I thought it was more problematic when he shushed his woman assistant. That's the only PR fallout that could come from. I
mean, perhaps.
He pretty aggressively said, he literally said, shush.
You read that two ways. He told the woman to be quiet, or he said, look, I'm not going to stick to my talking points. I'm going to answer this guy's question. So you look at it both ways.
Yeah. It's certainly an interesting race that we assume Bernie is, it's not if, but when at this point, but as Bernie Sanders is prone to do, he has not quite dropped out. Let's move on to congressional races, namely one you've been covering pretty extensively lately, the 3rd District here in Central Ohio. A popular incumbent, Joyce Beatty, she's in a very gerrymandered Central Ohio district. She faces a challenger from the left, Morgan Harper, very reminiscent of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Right.
Joyce Beatty has a lot more money. Harper has seen a lot of grassroots fundraising. Where would you peg that race right now?
I mean, I think that you have to, you know, given the vast, vast history that we have to look at, you have to sort of give Beatty the edge still. Mm-hmm. And there has been a little bit of that, that same thing with Biden, where he's trying to move on to the general. There has been a little bit of that with Joyce Beatty. You know, there have been two candidate forums in the past, you know, week and a half or so that she hasn't shown up to. One of them was, you know, she sent a statement to say, I couldn't make it because I was voting on the emergency funding for coronavirus. The other, she simply didn't show. Just couldn't make it. So there has been, I think, from my perspective covering it, a sense that perhaps she thinks she's got this. And, you know, she has polling and I don't. So, yes. You know, there could be something to that.
I will say this is the most I've heard from Joyce Beatty publicly in any of her time in Congress. She's
absolutely.
She's popular, but she does not say much.
Right.
She's in her, among her constituents, she's very active and she does a lot of work within her constituency. But as far as at campaign as.
And on the stump,
she's never faced a challenge like this since she first won the seat. And there was that four-way race to win the seat that was drawn, creatively so, after the census in 2011 when she faced Mary Jo Kilroy and two other candidates. But she's taking nothing for granted in this election. I think she's learned from past races, New York being one, AOC's race in New York,
right,
that you cannot take anything for granted. There is a generational divide in that district, especially among African-American voters. She's everywhere. She's on billboards. She's on TV. I can't open Facebook and not see her ad. And she's spending money. As far as looking forward to November will not matter. Whoever the Democrat is.
There's not a Republican challenger.
There might
be. Well, there are two. There are two.
Oh, there are. That tells you about the race.
There are and there aren't in this district.
So the thing that, not to just turn back to coronavirus again, but, you know, I think that's going to be a really important sort of like curveball to this race because, you know, I think a lot of those maybe like marginal voters that, you know, they cast a ballot sometimes, but not all the time. You know, the sort of people that a person like Morgan Harper is really trying to get out to vote, they might not now because of this. Either their polling location moved, or you know they feel uncomfortable about going out.
Or how about this? Older folks don't want to leave the house,
right?
And that's Joyce Beatty's vote.
Could be
in that district.
Yeah, that counterpoint.
I think the bigger issue is, or as big an issue as that, that's certainly a big issue, is Bernie Sanders falling behind in the Democratic race for president.
That's
the
true.
Bernie Sanders voters coming out are probably more likely to vote for Joyce Beatty's challenger, Morgan Harper, than Joyce Beatty. If they feel the race is over and they don't come out to vote because of the race is over, they're afraid of coronavirus, I think that hurts Morgan Harper's chances. If Bernie Sanders was on a roll or in a tough fight, I think that would really help Morgan Harper in this district.
You're probably right.
A lot of congressional races around the state we could talk about. One more that you've covered a lot here in Central Ohio as well, the 4th District. Three Democrats and an independent all vying to take Jim Jordan's seat. Jim Jordan is a very popular Republican incumbent in that district. He's a hometown kid, made good, national champion wrestler. But he's also taken a lot of flack for his role in defending Trump during his impeachment trial and also the Richard Strauss sexual abuse scandal here at Ohio State University. So, again, that district still leans heavily Republican. But
very heavily. It's
lean is a polite word.
Yeah, it's the opposite of the 3rd District. I don't see any Democrat beating Jordan. Is there any indication of which Democrat appears to be ahead in the primary?
At this point, no. It's hard to say. I mean, like, there are three that are out there, so it's definitely a very interesting field when you get more than just, you know, a binary choice. It gets really interesting. I mean, you got one guy who is sort of put him in more of a conservative Democrat lane. You have one that's, you know, kind of more like a traditional Democrat in Shannon Freshour. And then Mike Larson, who is, you know, pushing his more progressive credentials, who, you know, aggressively saying the only way that we win this race is if we, you know, get a real Democrat running. He just recently put out a pretty powerful ad on Twitter talking about his time working in California Congresswoman Jackie Speier's office, working with people who had experienced sexual assault in the mm-hmm. military. It's hard to say, and the bottom line is whoever does win this race is going to be, again, thrust into a really pretty ugly contest, because you're going to have Jim Jordan and that independent you mentioned is a former county Republican chair who left the party mm-hmm. and is going to be basically angling to peel votes off of Jim Jordan. And it's going to be very difficult to see how that actually goes.
No, still a very long shot. I think the only thing that Democrats can hope for is that the Jordan's link to the Strauss scandal becomes
right.
more defined than right now. There's really not. It's just a lot of talk.
Right.
He was a wrestling coach during that time. He denies that he knew about the abuse. There's been no real hard evidence that he knew about the abuse other than what the accusers say.
Yeah.
So, 12th District, Troy Balderson, he won in a special election, then won it for good a couple of years ago. Two Democrats, Jenny Bell from Columbus, she's a nurse practitioner, Elena Shearer, businesswoman from Delaware County, trying to face off against Troy Balderson. Nick, a freshman congressman
right.
is always a little vulnerable in this case, his first reelection campaign. Which of these Democrats seems to has the angle to take him on in November?
I don't really have an answer for that, to be honest with you. I will say,
Elena Shearer is the endorsed Democrat. She's the one that's popping up on the mailers.
Yeah, she's very okay. popular. She started the group Women in Tech, very very well known up in Delaware County. She's a moderate, I would say. I spoke to her. She the first thing she mentioned was families, paid family leave. That's one thing that's very important to her.
Very important now too, right?
Right. Yeah. No, that's a good thing to be running on right now. The Troy Balderson Danny O'Connor race from 2018 that Nick covered extensively
yes.
was an outlier for that district. That is also a very heavily Republican district, and that was almost. That seems to me a once-in-a-generation shot that Danny O'Connor had.
Right. I also think that it's illustrative that you have a guy like Danny O'Connor who, you know, has a bit of name recognition, has some, you know, real experience running for office and being a public servant. He lost twice in a row. You know, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that Balderson is, you know, necessarily seasoned by winning the special and then the general back to back. But, you know, he's done this before.
Yeah.
And the district is sort of leaning his way anyway. I think if either one of these Democrats has a shot, it's going to have to be because there is a massive, massive
yep.
shift in the general away from President Trump.
And Troy Balderson did survive a wave election. In 2018.
He did.
It would have to be a really big wave,
absolutely.
I would think, for him to lose in 2020.
Before we wrap up here, we should say that with 1 week until Ohio's primary, the Secretary of State, the Board of Elections, they're moving 128 polling places away from nursing homes and senior residential facilities over concerns about the coronavirus. Here in Franklin County, that affects about 20,000 voters. So, voters, before you head out to vote, make sure your polling place is open. I mean, that's a whichever way you're going, whichever party you're going to vote for, just make sure you're able to vote.
It's easy to do. Check your local county board of election website. Check the Secretary of State's website for both. You can call Secretary of State's
mm-hmm.
office, call your local county board of election office, and they will tell you if your polling place is open. And if it's not open, where it's moved to.
Nick,
or you can vote early. We still have a few days until Sunday.
I was just about to say it is important to note that there is a lot of opportunity to vote early at your county board of elections.
It's probably too late on a Thursday afternoon to ask for a mail-in absentee ballot. They're not going to be able to turn that around quick enough. But you can go to your local county board of election early voting center. And if you have a mail-in ballot sitting on your kitchen table or your kitchen counter, fill it out, mail it in, have it postmarked by Monday or on Tuesday, you can drive it down to your board of election office and drop it off.
More importantly, do the boards of elections sell toilet paper?
I don't think they sell toilet paper.
You can take some
from
the bathroom. Could you take some from the bathroom without telling anybody?
Talk about an incentive for vote. You know, come and get some hand sanitizer. That's probably illegal. That probably violates some kind of election law.
It probably is. Nick Evans, thanks as always.
Absolutely, anytime.
We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is, if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snolly Goster from WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown here with Mike Thompson. Usually this is the part of the show where we make fun of a politician. We poke fun at someone for an affair.
For a very shrewd political move of the week.
For being under investigation by the FBI and going around the globe.
Or just a gaffe.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that we point out here. We're going to take a break from that this week, just in the spirit of humans being good to each other right now in the face of this global pandemic. As we said, it's not a time to panic, but it is a time to be diligent about your health. And please be nice to each other. Please don't have any brawls in Costco. Please don't please don't fight over that last bottle of Purell. It's not worth it.
Yeah. As much as we can during this time, I think we have, for the most part, put partisan politics aside. There's still some of it, you know, on Twitter and on social media. But I think for the most part, people are looking at folks like Mike DeWine and even President Trump and saying, you know, Let's give them a chance. Let them see if they can figure this out.
Until next week, we hope the political atmosphere calms down. We hope that we're still getting these updates from Mike DeWine and Amy Acton. But again, everybody be safe. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snolly Goster from WOSU Public Media.